I have a dream.
One small step.
How may we say
that the wall must go.
Diner, Princess of Wales.
Into the World Trade Center.
Winner is Sydney.
This week in history.
Well, for this week in history, we're travelling to Cape Town, a spot at the bottom of Africa which became vitally important for ships heading from Europe to the east, and tells the story of how it was colonised by the Dutch, then the British, then the Dutch again, and then the British again. All of this paved the way eventually for the Dutch settlers living on the fringes of the colony to take umbrage at the British administration and head off on what's called the Great Trek to found the Transvaal Republic and the Orange Free State, which of course, even later, led to the clash with the British Empire in the Boer Wars. So the incident we're jumping off from for this week in history is the British invasion of Cape Colony in 1795, which led to the Dutch ceding control for the first time on September the 15th, 1795. To help us out, our historian this week is Professor Kirsten McKenzie from the Department of History at Sydney University. Welcome to the show, Kirsten.
Thank you very much for having me.
So how did this spot at the bottom of Africa first start to play an important role in European expansion and trade in the East?
Well, essentially it was the Europeans looking for routes to the Spice Islands of the East Indies, and the transcontinental trade that had happened over the Middle East, as we now call it, Constantinople, had been blocked off by warfare and by the control of Constantinople by opposition forces. And so Europeans started to look for alternate routes. And one of these was gradually finding a route around the continent of Africa, which they took some time to do. But eventually, by the late 1400s into the 1500s and beyond, they had established a sea route around the coast of Africa into the east. And so ultimately they needed a place to stop and provision their ships, take on fresh water, take on fresh food. And Cape Town was a useful spot to do that. It was temperate. It wasn't tropical. It had fresh water. It had the possibility of growing vegetables. And so the Dutch, after quite a lot of stopping off and trading, sometimes violently, sometimes peaceably, they actually did establish a permanent post there in 1652. And a colony grew from that.
Right. Okay. And I mean, they also had things like trees that they could use for the ships, I'm imagining. So, you know, then you needed the people around there for all that work. Who could settle in the colony?
Well, there were, of course, indigenous people living in at the southernmost tip of Africa when the Dutch arrived. Historians tend to refer to them now as the Khoi and the San. At the time, the Dutch had very pejorative names for them, which have continued into our own time, Hottentot, Bushmen. But these herders and hunter-gatherer peoples had a established culture in the southwestern Cape, in Cape Town. However, the Dutch, when they settled, they brought in labour from outside rather than using extensive labour, at least at first, from indigenous people. So the Dutch came in both with their own settlers and also with slaves from the Indian Ocean possessions of the Dutch Empire. So the Dutch colony that begins in the 1650s is not the initiative of the state. It's the initiative of a commercial company, the so-called VOC, which are the Dutch initials for Dutch East India Company. So the VOC, the Verenigde Oost-Indische Compagnie, begins a colony and brings in, as I've said, slaves and settlers, and also Europeans who are, if you like, indentured servants of the company. So they are not entirely free to go off and do whatever they want. They are bound to the company.
What a melting pot.
It is. It's a melting pot from very early on. You know, you've got Europeans, you've got Asians, and you've got Africans really from the 17th century.
Gosh, amazing. What a place it must have been. And where were the slaves from, you said?
The slaves, so the Dutch were not supposed to enslave the indigenous population. I mean, in part for strategic reasons. If you start raiding slaves with the local population, they're going to get a bit irate and you're likely to have warfare breaking out. That being said, there certainly was conflict, frontier conflict, as we would be familiar with in Australia, breaking out pretty early in the area around Cape Town and beyond. The Dutch certainly were engaged in frontier warfare with the Khoi and with the San, hunter-gatherer and herder peoples in the early period and beyond. The slaves that they brought in were from the Indian Ocean. So they were not from local South Africa. They were from the east coast of Africa, from Madagascar, okay. and from the Indian Ocean possessions of the Dutch Empire. So that means Batavia, what we would now call Indonesia, Malaysia, India. And so these people who came in as enslaved workers really added to the richness of the culture. The other group of people who came in were not just slaves from the Indian Ocean, but also political prisoners and convicts from the Indian Ocean. So some religious and political leaders from Malaysia and Indonesia came out to the Cape with their entourages. You know, these were men of high status who were in political exile for fighting the Dutch in the Indian Ocean possessions of their other parts of the empire. So in some ways, the Cape was a convict colony like Australia, rather differently.
But so with very different classes.
So you have a hugely diverse group of people in the colony, and from pretty early on, a very strong Muslim community, and Islam becomes a strong force of cultural unity among certain populations in Cape Town from pretty much the early period and beyond.
Okay, so it's 1795. There's quite a settlement there of really interesting mix of people, European settlers and slaves in Cape Town. Why in 1795 then? Was it suddenly a matter of great urgency for the British to take control of Cape Town?
Well, we've got to sort of think about it in the context of international events. Cape Town has always been a meeting point of different oceans, different cultures, different peoples. It's colonized really from the start because of its strategic place, and now its strategic position becomes another force directing its destiny. You have the VOC in decline in this period. Other rival commercial entities are growing up. The British are becoming stronger. The French are becoming stronger. There is already an alliance between the Dutch and the French that has grown up in the 18th century. Then in 1795, French Revolutionary Wars have broken out. So Britain is at war with France and therefore with her Dutch allies. And the Cape has a important strategic position on the sea route to India, where the British and the French are already engaged in warfare on the Indian subcontinent. And so whoever holds the Cape is going to hold an important route to India.
That's a hugely important, valuable asset.
Absolutely. Yeah. So it's a hugely valuable asset. And so the British invade. They send a conquering force. They invade. The Dutch don't put up very much of a resistance. They simply don't have the military resources to do that. And so the British do take over. It's 1795.
Okay, and that's September the 15th. Okay. We're going back to that date in This Week in History on Nightlife. Our guest is Professor Kirsten McKenzie, Department of History at Sydney University, is where she hails from, but you can hear a bit of a Cape Town accent in there too.
That is my hometown. I wasn't born there, but Cape Town is my hometown. Right. So,
what a history it's got.
It's great to be talking about it.
Yeah. Here. Okay. Fantastic. So did the English take over the operations of the settlement, or did they just sort of command certain bits that were important strategically?
Well, this is interesting because the British are fighting a global war essentially from the 1790s until 1815. So they're really overstretched. Mm. And the Cape is not the only colonial outpost that falls to the British in this period. They also take other colonies from their rivals in the same at the same time. So, for example, they take Mauritius, the island of Mauritius in the Indian Ocean. They take Ceylon, now Sri Lanka, from the Dutch. They take colonies in the Caribbean. They take Trinidad from the Spanish. So they have overstretched themselves and they've taken on a whole lot of these new colonial possessions. And simply for practical reasons, they really continue to rule through a large proportion of middlemen of the old regime. So they essentially co-opt the upper ranks of the Dutch, in the case of the Cape, into their administration.
And they go willingly?
Some of them do. If you think about the opportunities that being part of the British Empire is, this is the new kid on the block, but it's the right, you know, to mix metaphors, it's the rising star. It's Britain is going through an industrial revolution. They are massively expanding. To link yourself into that trading network is economically very advantageous. Also, the Dutch at the Cape can't militarily resist the British. So, you know, if you can't beat them, join them. And also, the upper levels of the Cape Dutch don't have a lot of loyalty to the VOC. The VOC has been a crumbling commercial power that has tried to put monopolies over the trade in the Cape. So they see, oh, here's a new British colony, free trade. We can trade with the entire British Empire. This is to our advantage. So some of them certainly see advantages. So there's kind of a mutual benefit in being part of the administration, at least at first.
Okay. But it only lasted till 1803, the British hanging on to the Cape. What happened?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, this is a very volatile international diplomatic and military circumstance. And there's essentially, if you like, half time is called on the Napoleonic Wars in 1803. There is a treaty, the Treaty of Amiens, in 1803. Hostilities are suspended. And as part of that treaty, the Cape is returned to the Dutch, not to the VOC, not to the company, but at this stage to what the new authorities in the Netherlands, the Batavian Republic, which is a French-allied republic. But it doesn't last for very long. The peace only lasts for 3 years. So in 1806, the British are back. The same circumstances.
But did they really leave, or were they just sort of stood?
They left.
They said in 1803, yeah, you can have it.
Yeah, you have it back. War was ended. Right. The Batavian Republic took power. There was, the old regime was now in place again, although reforms were happening because we had the company and now we've got the Batavian Republic. So there were commissioners sent out to investigate reforms to change the government system. But in 3 years, not very much had happened. So a lot of these plans never came to fruition. The British are back in 1806. Again, they take it militarily. There is a conquest that happens in 1806.
And the population are like, okay, now we've got the Brits again.
So now they had the Brits again. But of course, you know, it was unclear what was going to happen at first. It's only at the end of the Napoleonic Wars in 1814. 1815 is really the end of the wars because Napoleon escapes and, you know, it's kind of game on again. But it's only at the end of the war that the Dutch Republic then finally, in the negotiated settlement, the British take the Cape permanently.
All right. And that's when the Dutch formally gave up their claim?
That is when the Dutch formally gave up their claim.
Right. And then how quickly did the British start to bring settlers out to Cape Town and other parts of Cape Colony and make it more British?
Well, the Britons had come out to the Cape right from 1795. You know, people who had wanted to take opportunities to come out to trade at the Cape, military officers, had been passing through there. People had seen opportunities there. So there were certainly Britons around in Cape Town before this tossing and turning of the different authorities ends in 1815. But in terms of mass immigration, it's really after the end of the Napoleonic Wars. So Britain is going through an economic depression. There's mass demobilization of soldiers after the war. There is a great deal of concern about social unrest. This is a time, as I said, of industrialization, time of concern about social unrest. And one of the solutions is to send people out to the colonies. Mm. So there is state-sponsored immigration to the Cape from Britain in 1819, 1820, and a large number of British settlers come out and are settled in the eastern part of the colony. The problem is that the British authorities plonk them down into the middle of a war zone between expanding Europeans and indigenous Africans, the Amakosa, who are living on the, you know, that is their native space, that is their country.
Who are trying to resist.
And they are resisting the expansion of the European settlement.
So they're free settlers. It's not like Australia.
So free settlers are sent out to the colony of the Cape. But it is interesting that in relation to Australia, there are some parallels between the idea that greater settlement is going to come in to both the Cape and to the Australian colonies at that period. It figures differently in Australia, in the penal colonies, because the British state is keen to get as many poor and potential criminals out of Britain. They reform the convict system at that time and essentially try to make it, in the words of the Secretary of State, an object of greater terror to classes of the community. So transportation shouldn't be a ticket to a better life. It should be something that is going to deter crime. And in order to control these convicts, they promote free immigration to the Australian colonies. So all of these different, which we now as historians for a long time have seen as national stories, are actually interconnected stories.
Yeah.
So what's happening in South Africa with the sending out of these settlers under state financial help is analogous to the huge increase in convicts sent out to the Australian colonies and the huge increase in the number of free settlers who come out to the Australian colonies who are assigned convict labour.
Right.
So it's all part of the same process.
Mm. So people at the time might have been going, will I go to South Africa or will I go to Australia?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah,
that was the lottery.
So the choices, yeah.
Yeah. We're talking on This Week in History. We're going back to 1795 when the British invaded the Cape Colony at Cape Town. We've moved on a bit from then. My guest is Professor Kirsten McKenzie. She's from the Department of History at Sydney University. But what about the Dutch-speaking inhabitants of Cape Town who've also spread out? How did they feel being back under British control again?
A mix. So one of the things to remember that is in 1820, 90% of Europeans living in Cape Town are still of Dutch or German origin. And then there is this huge influx of Britain. So it really, the 1820s is really the sort of pivotal decade. And when I say a mix, you've still got those members of the Dutch elite who are allied with the British government, but more and more of the settlers who are coming out are rather different in their political orientation to the British establishment. So you have in control in the 1820s a very conservative, even for the part of the Tory Tory government, so the Tories, the Conservatives are in power in British Parliament, but a conservative, even within the Tories, a conservative faction, if you like, is in control of the Cape. And so they actually have a lot in common with the Dutch slave owners who are oligarchs, very sort of 18th century in their way of thinking. And now you've got a whole lot of new settlers coming out in the 1820s, many of whom are, in modern parlance, on more the left of the political spectrum. They are small L liberals. They are, the term at the time was Whigs.
Yeah.
They are on the opposition side of politics. And so the sort of a stage is set for increasing tension between these different political groups. And one of the big sticking points is the question of slavery. So this is a colony with slaves, and the British have abolished the slave trade in 1807, and then they abolished slavery in 1834. And the Dutch feel, you know, very resentful towards this. Large proportion of them feel that they do not believe in ideas of emancipation, in ideas of small L liberalism. And so there is increasing tension. And what's known as the slave question really strikes at the heart of the potential for alliance between British and Dutch. That's not to say that all Dutch are pro-slavery or conservative in their political attitudes. There is a proportion of Dutch, particularly in the Western Cape and Cape Town, who are allied with the British, but it becomes a huge source of tension.
Right. Okay. And what was the Great Trek that happened around this time?
So the Great Trek is one response to the increasing anglicisation, if you like, of the colony. It is becoming more English. And although I've emphasized slavery as a kind of key sticking point, it's not the only sticking point. The British send out in the 1820s a commission of inquiry, what we'd call a royal commission. It's essentially sent out to the colony to investigate. Now we have the colony and we've taken it from the Dutch in the Napoleonic Wars. How do we make its legal system, its judicial system, its government more suited to being British than to being Dutch?
Yeah.
So a lot of these Dutch oligarchs are losing their jobs and new British officials are coming in. So instead of a Dutch Chief Justice, you now have a British a Chief Justice.
So they started the Trek.
Well, the Trek is really not from the elite. The Trek is from those who are more marginal in the economy. So there had for a long time been movement into the frontier, the so-called voortrekkers, those who move before, the front trekkers, if you like. There had been a long tradition of expansion into frontier areas, a little like the squatters in Australia. So voortrekkers had moved into the interior in search of land for generations. They had clashed with indigenous people. As a result of that, there had been extended frontier warfare through the 17th and 18th century. But the Great Trek, so-called, is something qualitatively different, and it begins in 1835 and it lasts for about a decade. It's progressive. It's a progressive gathering of communities who then move into the interior to remove themselves from British rule.
And what do they set up? Transvaal?
Well, ultimately they set up two independent republics, the South African Republic, which we commonly know as the Transvaal, and the Orange Free State. And the British do, by the 1850s, recognize those two independent republics. And there is extensive violence with indigenous people violence enacted on indigenous people in the process of this trek. But ultimately, these republics are carved out of the interior of South Africa.
And that set up the conditions for the Boer War.
Eventually, it did. So, as I said, 1850s, the British Imperial State recognizes these republics, but the real game changer is the discovery of diamonds and later the discovery of gold that happened in the last quarter of the 19th century. And it's really it's those resources that set up an extended rivalry between the British.
That's a whole other story, which we won't go into tonight. So it does show that just the richness of the history of Cape Town, though. I mean, as someone who's lived there, do you sense that when you in the present day?
You absolutely do. You know, South Africa is known as the Rainbow Nation. It has 11 official languages. It is an extremely diverse country in its population and in its geography. But even within South Africa, the Western Cape, and even within the Western Cape, Cape Town is very distinctive. And it's because of this mix of Asian, European, and African that goes back right to the 1650s. And so the result is an extremely diverse, extremely rich culture, which has left its mark on food, on language, on architecture, and on the fabric of Cape Town in the modern day.
You'd get some great family trees there for doing some personal history as well as the history of the area. Thank you so much for taking us to Cape Town. We started in 1795 for This Week in History, September the 15th, which is when the British invasion took place and the Dutch ceded control. But as we know, it went back and forth, and that's how we got to the setup of the Boer Wars. That's a whole other story we'll do another night. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
We've been chatting to Professor Kirsten McKenzie from the Department of History at Sydney University.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.